This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Hope you had a great resurrection weekend. It's good to be back behind the microphone. Coming up today, yesterday, Vice President Mike Pence was in the demilitarized zone between North and South Korea, saying the U.S. has no more strategic patience with the North Korean regime of Kim Jong-un. Now, how critical has this situation become? Texas Congressman Ted Poe, a member of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, is here in just a moment. Criminal justice reform is something that's moving across the country as state policymakers grapple with the price tag that comes with having the highest rates of incarceration in the industrialized world. Well, one alternative is redirecting nonviolent offenders into faith-based programs and also partnering with churches and other religious organizations for reentry programs. I spoke on behalf of the effort in Baton Rouge this morning, and one of the sheriffs advancing the cause is Pointe Coupee Sheriff Bud Torres, and he joins me a little bit later here on Washington Watch. Also, parents in Minnesota, in a Minnesota school district, are dropping their lawsuit against the U.S. Department of Education based upon actions by the Trump administration to actually reverse policies of the Obama administration. Matt Sharp with Alliance Defending Freedom is here with this good news story a little bit later on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. You can find out more about today's guest and the topics we're covering. If you happen to miss anything on your way home, well, just check it out later. Everything's archived right there at TonyPerkins.com. Also, information there about the Watchman on the Wall briefing for pastors coming up May 24th through 26th. We still have a little bit of room. So, pastors, this is for you. If you would like to be a part of the growing network of pastors across the nation standing on the spiritual walls of our nation, well, be our guest on May the 24th through the 26th for our annual Watchman on the Wall pastors briefing. Again, you can find out more about that by going to TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, you can keep up with me, at T. Perkins. Right, U.S. military officials confirmed over the weekend that an attempted missile launch by North Korea failed. The rocket blew up seconds after launch. The U.S. Pacific Command says the missile was launched early Sunday morning from North Korea's east coast and exploded almost immediately on launch. The tensions between the United States and North Korea are mounting. As I mentioned earlier, the vice president was in the demilitarized zone yesterday. What might we expect? How serious has this situation become? Joining us now, Congressman Ted Poe. He represents the 2nd Congressional District of the state of Texas, and he is a member of the Foreign Affairs Committee in the House. Congressman, welcome back to the program.
Always good to talk to you, Tony.
Well, good to talk to you as well, and I'm sure you're keeping your eye on this situation. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of hot spots around the world, but this one is of particular concern. Have we reached the zenith of this escalation, or is there more to come?
There will be more to come, the escalation from North Korea. The dictator has made it clear that he views the United States as the enemy of North Korea. And so he will continue to develop not only nuclear weapons, but a way to deliver those weapons through missiles and conventional weapons as well. And I think the long-term plan for North Korea for delivery of these nuclear weapons is really not to launch them from the mainland of North Korea, but to launch them from submarines in the Pacific. And that is their ultimate plan for is launching these missiles. So he's going to continue the saber rattling, and he's going to continue to develop weapons for his own political gain in North Korea. What we're doing, the United States has sent these defensive missiles equipment called THAAD. It's an updated version of the Patriot missile, so to speak. And they're going to be put in South Korea. What those missiles do, they actually intercept a missile coming from another place like North Korea on the way down, and then destroy the missile as it comes toward land. It's not an offensive weapon. It's a totally defensive weapon. And they're supposed to be very good. They have not been used yet, but they're going to be deployed in South Korea. Also, I have filed a bill in the House to designate North Korea as a state sponsor of terrorism. It has passed the House, and now it is over in the Senate. What that will do, if they're redesignated as a state sponsor of terrorism, they will be sanctions will be imposed on them, and other countries will have to abide by those sanctions, or the United States will prohibit those countries from doing business with us. That's a possibility. They were on the state sponsor of terrorism list. They were taken off with the promise that they would not develop nuclear weapons, and of course they lied, and so we're going to hopefully put them back on. Those are a couple of things that are happening. Plus, our Navy is moving to that area of the country as well to protect the U.S. national interests. Our main two concerns besides us, South Korea and Japan as well. And Japan is accelerating their military development as well because they're concerned about their own safety from North Korea. So those are some of the things that are taking place.
So, Congressman Poe, given the increasing frequency with these missile tests of North Korea, I would think that that would give, and of course, not to mention the statements that they're making, I would think that would give greater impetus to your legislation being approved in the Senate, putting them back on the state sponsor of terrorism list.
I think so. It passed the House almost unanimously. I think there were three people who voted no out of 435. I don't see any problem in the Senate, at passing the Senate as well. Ted Cruz is leading the effort in the Senate, and then hopefully get it passed and have President Trump sign that right away.
Now, some have said that the failed rocket launch over the weekend in North Korea was possibly influenced by, some cyber hacking that possibly the United States may have a part of. Was that just a failed launch, or were they helped in that failure?
It was a failed launch. I do not know whether or not the United States used any cyber tactics in that missile endeavor or not. I really don't know the answer to that question. It wouldn't surprise me if we did, but I do not know one way or the other whether the United States did that.
Is there some anticipation, Congressman Poe, that, and I know the president met with Chinese leaders, that China will play a bigger role in influencing North Korea and their actions?
Yes, I think you're exactly correct. China has to be the one to solve this problem diplomatically and be involved. And the North Korea is a puppet of China. They're a buffer between China and South Korea. But I think that at the end of the day, China will see the need that it's not in their best interest that North Korea continue nuclear weapon development. And because to protect their own interests, they will put some restraint on Little Kim, as I call him. They have already cut back the importation of some goods from North Korea in result of their nuclear weapon development. I think we might see some more of that. But the answer is to get China to work with the United States and, really frankly, South Korea and Japan to ratchet in North Korea's actions. And I think they can do that, but that is vital for a diplomatic solution to be the answer to all of this.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. Congressman Ted Poe of Texas, my guest. We're talking about recent events in North Carolina, North Korea. Yesterday, the vice president visited the demilitarized zone between North and South Korea, and of course, the rhetoric escalating from there. You know, Congressman, I found it somewhat fascinating, if not amusing, how the press has portrayed the Trump administration, the president in particular, being very decisive in actions in Syria, launching the Tomahawk missiles a couple of weeks ago, also last week dropping the Moab there in Afghanistan, and you know, trying to portray him as a warmonger. And you know, as I look at that, I think, no, what it is, we just finally have a president who's willing to actually put actions behind his words, and the international stage is in such disarray because of the lack of leadership we had. You know, he's forced to take actions, or nobody's going to listen.
That's exactly correct. He's put in a situation where the same situation that the previous president was put in, that he had to make a decision. The previous president always backed down, appeasement, strategic patience, and let these rogue dictators do exactly what they want. And Syria and North Korea are perfect examples. And when it, in as far as Syria goes, the president was very clear that the use of chemical weapons is a violation of international law, and a nation that does that, like Syria, they're going to have to suffer the consequences for doing this. This is probably the worst thing any country can do, is use chemical weapons against their own people. So the strike was to go after the source of those chemical attacks in that airfield. It was not a statement that we're going back into Syria. It was that you can do this to your own people. And for North Korea, the president has also said that he's going to make it very clear that we're going to protect the United States and our national interests, and people who want to develop weapons to hurt us, there's going to be consequences to that. Now, that is not warmongering. That is just looking out for the interest of the United States and for peace in general, and it is leadership. And the world has had no U.S. leadership for the last 8 years on foreign policy. That's why we have these countries developing weapons that they want to use against not only us but other countries as well. So we have leadership, the press criticizing, but it makes no difference what President Trump does. The state media, the national media, will always criticize the president no matter what decision he makes about anything.
Yeah, without question. Well, I think he's making the right moves. Congressman Ted Poe, as always, great to talk with you, and thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Always good to talk to you too, Tony. Thank you.
All right, Congressman Ted Poe of Texas, who represents the 2nd Congressional District. Great guy. Former state judge. You know, he's one of those guys that, you know, he cared about public policy but was not going to do it from the bench. So he stepped down and he ran for Congress, and he's been very successful in Congress. You know, the world is in such disarray, as he pointed out, because of the lack of leadership from the United States. And so the president, new administration comes in, and you know what? He takes decisive actions, and all of a sudden people are aghast. Look, it's going to take a while to get things back in order, and it's going to ruffle a few feathers, including that of the media. Oh, well. All right, coming up next, might there be ways to reduce crime in our nation's communities through faith-based partnerships? Sheriff Bud Torres, who is with Point Coupee Parish, will join us after the break. Don't go away.
Your mission is to find Granny and get that sauce.
Affirmative.
1 million moms, in association with American Family Studios, introduces Ryan DeFrades' Secret Agent.
I'm Ryan DeFrades. I work alone.
Ryan is arrogant and reckless until the day he's paired with a very unlikely partner.
No way! I can do this alone, without anyone's help, much less my mom's.
Look, Ryan.
She's my mom!
Ryan DeFrades' Secret Agent is the new action-adventure series featuring a young spy with a whole lot to learn.
Mama's coming, sweetie!
She's an agent! Get her, boys!
Each exciting, fun-filled episode teaches children important values, like honoring parents and respecting authority. And there's a brief wrap-up at the end that connects the story to a biblical illustration. Ryan DeFrades' Secret Agent. Perfect for children ages 6 and over. Pre-order your copy today at afastore.net.
This is Barry McGuire. I'm a car guy, and I love to lead people to Jesus Christ as a layman outside the walls of the church. You know, it's amazing how different everything looks when you look at things through God's eyes. His razor focus is on each one of us as individuals, where we are in our journey to first accepting Christ as our Lord and Savior, and secondly, to hold as our highest priority the leading of others to Him. Soon and very soon, we'll stand before the judgment seat of Christ when nothing will matter except our diligence in doing these two things. How very foolish it is to get caught up in all the cares and worries of this world and lose sight of this glorious fact. Jesus is Lord. We're on our way to heaven, and our purpose is to help Him get as many people as possible into heaven before it's too late. Your job is to ignite revival outside the walls of the church by moving every person you're with today and every day closer to Jesus. And if you want to know how to do that, go to ROTW.com.
We've always had an interest. God has given us a gift of being able to help a lot of people with their finances and budgets and stuff.
AFA supporters Bernie and Alice Larson met Dan Celia at a Faith, Family, and Finance town hall meeting.
And he answered some questions, and we were thinking about the charitable gift annuities, and we'd never heard of that before, but we thought, well, we'd always wanted to leave some of our money for God, but we didn't know where or how. And we felt like this was put into our laps as answer to our prayers as to what we could do after we're gone.
Bernie and Alice learned a charitable gift annuity from the AFA Foundation would provide them with a monthly income for life, as well as supporting the American Family Association into the future. You can learn more about charitable gift annuities and other financial products at AFAFoundation.net or call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
And you just can't outgive God.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, criminal justice reform is moving across the country as policymakers are grappling with the high price tag that comes with having the highest rate of incarceration in the industrialized world. The United States puts away more people in prison. It was a part of the Get Tough on Crime. Now, back when I was in office almost 20 years ago, I authored legislation to try to encourage my home state of Louisiana to work more closely with faith-based organizations to help reentry of those who are coming out of prison to reduce the recidivism rate, meaning the frequency with which they go back to prison. Well, that's become a movement. And there are across the country people doing this because they know we can't afford to incarcerate people, costing on average $18,000 to $20,000 a year. Well, one sheriff in my home state of Louisiana is working on this on his own and has started a kind of a faith-based initiative within his own prison system there within the parish of Pointe Coupee, and is getting remarkable results. And as a result, he is speaking out on state legislation to try to get this through the state of Louisiana. So joining us now is the sheriff of Pointe Coupee Parish in Louisiana, Bud Torres. Bud, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, good to have you, Tony. Good to hear from you.
Well, Sheriff, good to have you on the program. I guess I should have told folks we go way back to when you were a state police officer and I was working at the State Police Academy there in Baton Rouge. I've known you for quite some time. You're on your third term as sheriff, correct?
That is correct, Tony. Time passes.
It does. Let's talk a little bit about the program that you have initiated in Pointe Coupee that has brought the recidivism rate down and is actually finding quite a bit of success.
Yes, we started a reentry program about 5 years ago, and this has been a long process. When we took over, we introduced faith-based organizations into our facility where they would actually minister to the inmates and try to show them, you know, the way of God, and we were successful in that way. And long about 5 years ago, we came up with the idea that we were going to do something about the recidivism rate. Louisiana is about 32%, which is the highest in the nation. And we started working through that process. We were able to get a grant from the Huey Wilson Foundation But currently we have about 20 ministers working in our facility with a refurbished building that we had on campus that was actually a vegetable shed. We call it the potato shed. But we repurposed that building and made it a chapel slash training center. And we've been able to enjoy, over the last 3 years, tracking these inmates, the people that go through our program, which is a 16-week program, we're realizing about a 5% recidivism rate with those folks.
That's pretty remarkable, given the average in the state is 32%. You're talking about getting it down to 5%. Now, this is voluntary on behalf of the inmates. The inmates volunteer to go through this, as well as the ministers who are in the local community. They volunteer their time to do this as well. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So any what kind of feedback have you gotten from the community? Because I know you've been very vocal about this, and you've made it a focal point. You're trying to do it, get this moving more at the state level. What kind of feedback have you gotten?
It's been a mixed feedback. Some people are just staunch in their position that people convicted of crime need to go to jail and they need to be punished for it. Reform. You have to have a different perspective. I think that everybody has value and that everybody has an opportunity to find redemption in the process. And without redemption, there is no correction, so to speak. So we have to work with people and have a way out and give them an opportunity, at a second shot.
Now, Sheriff, when we're talking about, there's several aspects of this criminal justice reform. There's the reentry, trying to help people make it back into society, giving them the tools, and that's where the partnership with these faith-based groups help. But also there's the redirection of nonviolent offenders. Most of these reform efforts are focused on keeping nonviolent offenders from the same track that would put them basically in the shadow of violent offenders, which often just makes them better criminals.
Right, and if you look at the statistics, you would have to draw that conclusion that when you get someone who is marginal, has made a mistake in doing his time, so to speak. If you don't have programs, if you don't have faith-based ministries inside of your facility, if you're not out there actively trying to engage those folks to do better, they're going to be taught by the more serious offenders how to be better criminals.
Right. And there's no question. I saw that back when I was in law enforcement. In fact, my first assignment was in the parish prison, so I saw that up close and personal. Sheriff, before we run out of time, I want to ask you about the pastors. Have you gotten a good response from pastors wanting to help in this initiative in your prison?
Yes, I do. And it's a funny thing, Tony. Not everybody wants to do the prison ministry. They talk about working outside the wall of the church, going to where, the people that need the help. And it doesn't, one size does not fit all here. It's very challenging. These guys are really downtrodden. It's very hard to go back and it's the connection that you have. I find that the ministers that have prior history of going to jail and are born again and come back out and their passion to become ministers are my greatest asset. And there's about five of those guys that come in, minister to those inmates, and they have walked in their shoes, so to speak, and they connect with them. They understand the language, they understand the culture, and they can really relate to these guys. And you have to have that communication piece, that connectivity with a person to actually change their heart.
Absolutely. It's a relationship, and if you've been down that path, you understand it. Sheriff, thanks so much for joining. Great to talk with you.
It was good seeing you today, Tony, and best of luck to you. God bless you.
All right, thanks, Bud. Sheriff Bud Torres, Pointe Coupee Parish in Louisiana. All right, when we come back, some parents in Minnesota were suing the Department of Education because of a policy put in place by Barack Obama. They have voluntarily dropped their suit. Their attorney, Matt, with Alliance Defending Freedom, joins us after the break. Don't go away.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Industrial production number is still going to be a key number for at least me this week, particularly in light of some of the things that we are beginning to see as far as earnings go. And look, this week is going to be an earnings story. We started off the week strong in the indices. Obviously, I think we're going to see some pullback from that based on some of the earnings that we already have seen. The other thing that is going to weigh in, certainly to the markets, is going to be housing starts. So housing starts fell 7%. This is an April number, by the way. Housing starts down. Now, some of that slack was picked up by way of permits because permits rose 3.6%. So that's good news as we look ahead. But the April number for housing starts certainly down, I would say significant. Anyway, but industrial production is one that will be out later on, and we'll get a good look at that and see what that looks like. Of course, we get existing home sales later in the week, and that's going to kind of sum up where we are as far as home sales goes. One of the things that is of concern to the markets is the Federal Reserve talking about unwinding their balance sheet. I happen to think this is a good thing. As you know, I've been calling for this for some time. One of my biggest concerns was that the Federal Reserve had no exit strategy for the $4.5 trillion that is on their books and continue to be renewed year after year. But it looks like they're talking about exiting out of that. I happen to think it's going to have very little impact on the markets as a whole, as that is going to be unwound very gradually over the course of a number of years.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. A group of parents and students voluntarily ended their lawsuit last week against the U.S. Department of Education, the U.S. Department of Justice, and a Minnesota school district in the wake of positive actions that the two federal agencies and the district have taken to respect the privacy, safety, and dignity of all students in intimate changing areas such as locker rooms. Joining us now with more details, Matt Sharp, legal counsel with Alliance Defending Freedom. Matt, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is another example of the fact that elections have consequences, is it not?
That's absolutely right. There was a lot of people very upset when the Obama administration recklessly announced last year that it was going to force every public school in the country to open up its showers, locker rooms, and restrooms to members of the opposite sex. And so when voters responded to that, I think we were all pleased to see President Trump rescind that order and restore sanity on this important issue and allow schools to once again protect the privacy of all students.
So has the school reverted back to its original policy now?
Well, there was a couple of steps that the school took that were important steps to restore privacy. Number one, that they designated one locker room in particular that was only for biological girls. One of the concerns had been that there really was no place that girls that we were representing could go to change and shower and use the restroom without this one boy being allowed to enter into those facilities. And so the school recognized that there needed to be a place and designated one that this male student is not allowed to go into. And so it was respecting the privacy of these girls and ensuring that they always had a private, safe place where they could change. And then the other thing that it did, it also made sure that these girls could not be penalized or declared tardy if, when using this one locker room, they ended up being late for a gym class or other activity. So ultimately, the school was respecting these girls' privacy, and that's what led for us to ultimately dismiss the lawsuit.
So is that the final arrangement that they're going to make? It still sounds like the burden is upon the girls to have to use a separate facility rather than the normal facility.
Well, we view it as the girls are still having a locker room that's designated for them. And that's one of the things in this entire discussion we've been asking for, is that there always ought to be at schools a place where girls and guys alike can go and shower, change, only with members of the same biological sex. And so when the school district did this and enforced that locker room, refused to allow this boy to go in there, we saw that as a positive recognition of these girls' rights. and again, what led us to dismiss the lawsuit.
Now, what about restroom policies? What remains in terms of restroom usage?
Yeah, so the school district is still having this one locker room, and again, my understanding is it includes both showers and restrooms and things like that, where these girls are going to have their privacy protected. There are still other places in the school that it is maintained as gender neutral, which is troubling to say the least. But as long as these girls continue to have a place that is solely for members of the female sex, that this boy can't enter or any other students who proclaim to be female, though are biologically male, we think that's ultimately what these students are entitled to, is to know that there's always going to be places that are safe, secure for them, where their privacy is protected.
And so the parents were satisfied without that outcome and have then dropped the legal suit?
That's right, yeah. And so I think, you know, ultimately over the long haul, this is a positive step of schools rescinding where they had originally gone and recognizing that there needs to be some common sense protections offered, some common sense solutions that ensure that there are adequate facilities for these girls, that they're not being relegated to a single stall restroom or something like that, but they actually have a full, fully operational locker room with showers and restrooms and everything else that's designated solely for them.
Yeah, that's the minimum. I think the onus should not be upon them, but rather those that want to play this gender charade. They should be the ones that are inconvenienced, not the girls just going about being a girl. You know,
yeah.
The way I see it. Matt, thanks so much for joining us. Great to talk with you, and it is a positive outcome. Shows that elections do have consequences. Matt, thanks so much for your help.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, Matt Sharp, legal counsel for Alliance Defending Freedom. It is an example of, you know, and this is a small example, but by the Department of Education and the Department of Justice rescinding those letters of guidance on Title VII and Title IX, the school districts can revert back to common sense policies. Now, some school districts, you know, are not. They're going to have to be forced. And that's where parents come in. You're going to have to make sure those things happen. It's just like, you know, I've said repeatedly, when we're looking across the federal landscape, whether it's in the military or in these federal agencies, just the election itself is not going to correct everything that the previous administration did. It's not self-correcting. It's going to take intentionality. And in this case, it was rescinding of those letters. But even so, some of these school districts are going to hold on to those bizarre, misguided, dangerous policies that they had in place. So parents, you know, we've always had to keep an eye on what's happening with our kids in the schools, but even so, more so today. It's not just what they're taught from the textbooks. Now they're being taught so much more, even from the signs on the restroom doors. All right, when we come back, we're going to go to the phone lines. We're going to hear what you think on this Tuesday afternoon. I want to talk about this whole idea of criminal justice reform. A little bit off the beaten path that we generally talk about, but I think it's an important issue. And policymakers across the country talking about these issues. So we're going to talk about it here on Washington Watch when we return.
When governments authorize abortion, do abortions in that country decrease? Many argue that abortion should be safe, legal, and rare, as if rarity depends upon safety and legality. We now have nearly a century of evidence documenting what happens when governments authorize abortion. It does not become rare, but increases exponentially. Indeed, in less than 100 years, abortion has become the greatest Holocaust ever, far surpassing all wars and genocide combined. The Abortion Worldwide Report is the first to systematically track reported abortions in 100 nations, territories, and regions from the year of authorization through 2015. The principal authors of the Abortion Worldwide Report are William Robert Johnston and Thomas Jacobson, who compiled the data and information in the report over the last 32 and 14 years, respectively. Their research has revealed that over 1 billion babies have been aborted in 100 nations since 1920. Visit frc.org/university to view this policy discussion.
Consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
Join Norman Geisler, Richard Land, Michael Brown, Frank Turek, and others for Southern Evangelical Seminary's National Conference on Christian Apologetics. It's October 13th and 14th in Charlotte, North Carolina. Enjoy informative talks, a live debate, and a dialogue with Ken Ham from Answers in Genesis. Plus, there's the premiere of the American Family Association documentary, The God Who Speaks. Register by May 1st and receive a special gift. Visit ses.edu for details.
It can be hard to be honest with our loved ones about abortion in our past. Hi, Kim Katola for Cradle My Heart Today, but having a famous father makes it that much tougher. Zig Ziglar's daughter Julie says peer pressure led to her becoming sexually active as a teen. Abortion followed. She thought that telling her dad the truth would diminish his reputation and break his heart. But instead, he modeled God's love for Julie as he wept with her and for the loss of his grandchild. Sharing your story with family members may not always go smoothly, but Julie found support to help decide whom to tell and how in an abortion recovery group. Through Bible studies, retreats, and peer counseling, many are being restored. Find out more of Julie Ziegler Norman's story and resources to find help after abortion at CradleMyHeart.org. Saving lives and healing hearts after abortion, one story at a time. CradleMyHeart.org.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. All right. Earlier, we were talking about this Right on Crime effort. It really kind of follows the lock 'em up, three strikes, you're out. That really was hitting in the 80s, early 90s, and into the 90s. Get tough on crime, and it doesn't look like it's worked. All right. A lot of nonviolent offenders, and I saw this firsthand as a deputy in the prison, working in the prison, then later on the road, that you got guys that, and then the drug problems were not, and they were serious, but not nearly as serious as they are today. Opioids and others, it's being called a health crisis that we see today. Most of the nonviolent offenders, it has to do with drugs. Drug possession is at the top of the list when it comes to nonviolent offenders. And if you put them in prison with hardened violent criminals, guess what happens? They become violent, hardened criminals. So part of this Right on Crime or this reform of criminal justice is to direct them into treatment facilities. And part of this is, and this is what I was pushing for even 20 years ago, but now it's actually caught on, are faith-based organizations that help. Because when you look at drugs and crime and bad choices, it's usually driven by issues. And it's oftentimes the drugs are used to try to, self-medicate, to suppress issues, oftentimes issues that are spiritual in nature. And the success rate of these faith-based organizations, which are holistic, dealing with both the addiction, the physical aspect of the addiction, but also the spiritual nature of it. And, of course, as we talked about with Sheriff Torres, the reentry of having people partner, come alongside these inmates who are being released, serving their time, coming back into society, helping them integrate back in. That's difficult. I've actually worked with some, and it's very difficult for them to make that step. But when you think about it, we're spending $18,000 to $20,000 per inmate. We incarcerate more than any industrialized country. Can we sustain that? And so policymakers are working to reform the system to provide alternatives for nonviolent, and I emphasize nonviolent, offenders. Now, the case I made this morning for this was that here's the dilemma that many policymakers are, especially after the 8 years of the Obama administration, that you had an administration that was hostile toward religious expression, driving many religious people and institutions out of the public square. And they're the very ones that can help government solve some of these difficult problems. And so they have to, policymakers, have to take a more balanced view of religious expression and religious organizations, allowing the freedom of religion. In fact, embracing that, not forcing it. Government can't do that, nor should they do that. But they should not marginalize and hinder religious participation. When you look, and it's not just trying to patch people up after they've made mistakes, but we, you know, through our Marriage and Religion Research Institute, which we've now spun off at the Family Research Council, some of the research that we did showed very clearly that young people coming from very troubled neighborhoods, impoverished neighborhoods, that religious attendance made the greatest difference in academic achievement prospects, which, guess what, keeps them out of trouble and puts them on a pathway to success. And the role of religion in building relationships and habits of hard work reinforces a conventional orientation to success and achievement. But yet, we have government marginalizing religious participation and religious involvement. So we've got to change. We've got to change the way we look at religious institutions. So here's what I want to talk about. If you want to talk about it, give me a call. 866-372-7234. What do you think? Is it time for our policymakers to revisit how we deal with nonviolent offenders? I'll just give some examples. In Louisiana, they spend nearly $750 million a year on corrections. But one in every three inmates that are released return within 3 years. It's not working. One of the highest recidivism rates in the country. Of course, Louisiana is not alone. It's happening in other countries. Is it time for policymakers to take on this issue of partnering with faith-based and other organizations to help get people help? 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. If you want to weigh in on that, you know, a lot of policymakers, and I talked to several Louisiana legislators this morning, it's often misreported in the media, it's misunderstood, it's seen as if people being soft on crime, and so policymakers are afraid to take it on. This is where you can weigh in. I mean, do you want your money going to house nonviolent offenders when they could actually be redirected to deal with their issues, make restitution for any crimes that they did or any damage or harm that they did in their criminal activity, and then become productive citizens? Does that make more sense, or is it better just to lock them up and keep them there and you pay the bill? Again, I emphasize we're talking about nonviolent offenders. 866-372-7234. The Homeland Security Secretary, General John Kelly, says the U.S. faces relentless threats on a number of fronts. This was out of Washington today. Just wanted to mention this. He's the Homeland Security Secretary. In a speech today in Washington, D.C., he said that those threats include terrorism, drug cartels, and violent international gangs, as well as cyber attacks. Kelly also touted new border security measures and defended efforts to crack down on illegal immigration. He also said that the opioid epidemic poses a growing national security threat. And then he called marijuana a dangerous gateway drug and said federal laws will continue to be enforced despite the decriminalization of marijuana in some states. And I say he's absolutely correct. And that is often a gateway drug into more harder, dangerous substances, which feeds crime. You know, it just doesn't make sense. Some of the stuff we see happening, it really is crazy. All right, 866-372-7234. Let's go to Alabama, where Craig is on the line. Craig, welcome to Washington Watch.
How you doing, Tony? I appreciate your work.
Well, thank you.
Definitely one of our champions. I've called a few other times, but on this issue, the Lord saved me back in 73. I was addicted to marijuana at the time, which I kind of walked away from that with his help. But having been injured and having to be on pain medication starting in 2005, I spent 11 years on opiates at various doses. I feel like as far as opiates, they're being vilified because now they've got Suboxone out there, which, you know, of course, is more addictive. There were several people at the halfway house I was at that were struggling with getting off that. But anyway, as far as that process, yes, I definitely agree. I mean, there were many there, and some of them would have really been destroyed had they gone to a hardened prison, and some of them were headed that way if the treatment wasn't successful. But I was at a facility in Brookhaven, Mississippi, up close to Memphis, well, about 2 miles from Memphis. I felt like they did a good job. They were doing their best. They employed the people who had gone through it before in a lot of cases. Personally, the Lord just walked me through that too.
Well, and that's like ultimately that's where our help comes from. But you know, Craig, some people just need to meet him, and fortunately, you had that relationship with him, and that's where the faith-based organizations are helpful in that they're holistic. They deal with the body and the soul. And when you're simply trying to deal with the physical aspects of addiction, you're missing the greater problem. Now, sometimes people, because of, you know, you had an injury, you were taking pain medicine, one thing leads to another. But oftentimes, it's not because of an accident, but rather it's an effort to try to suppress and fill a void in our lives, which leads to these addictive behaviors. Craig, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate you listening. All right, we're going to move on to Indiana, where Bob is on the line. Bob, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, welcome. I'm glad you took my call. I have a facility that the commissioners have given us that can house 50 people, and we have a faith-based initiative there. We don't have it in our documents, but we are allowing it and encouraging it. We're patterning it after Delancey Street in San Francisco, a two-year free program that's strictly volunteering. The judges are behind us, etc. But several years ago, I brought Dr. Byron Johnson from Baylor University here for a book signing, his book, More God, Less Crime. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but he has measurable data over 30 years of how faith initiatives do reduce recidivism. While he was here, I had the judges, some ex-offenders, personal testimonies, and the sheriff, and I had the commissioner do a pie chart on how many roads, et cetera, he could pave by reducing recidivism 10, 20, 30%, whatever it would be, and the benefit to the taxpayers. So the taxpayers, which ultimately pay the price for the huge county budget that goes to incarceration, the jail, et cetera.
So is your facility up and running?
Yes, it is. It's relatively new. It's taken us a while because we've got to get an initial cadre of strong residents, as we call them, that are willing, are ready to mentor the new ones coming in. And they will do the interview process. The judges said they could fill the place up, and I said, well, you can try, but we'll only accept those that sincerely want to change and can pass a stringent interview by their peers.
And so this they have an option. This is an option for them that they can come to that if you accept them.
That's right. And they don't we don't have any security other than the doors are locked, but and we will have some cameras outside. We don't at this point, but they can leave if they want to. Because it's a voluntary thing, but we have a huge agriculture project ready to go. We already have tomato plants, things growing, and we have a woodworking shop, and we will teach them culinary, woodworking, and master gardening so that they have a sustainable occupation when they get out of there.
And, how long is the program, Bob?
Well, we started out at 2 years, just like Delancey Street, but that scared too many people away, so we lowered it to a year and a three-month probation where they have absolutely no outside contact, no radio, no television, and, cell phones, et cetera. We're following the Delancey model, but Delancey does not allow any faith-based initiatives. Everything mm-hmm. we have is strictly voluntary. We just brought in a ordained minister that's one of our residents, and we have another volunteer chaplain in the Allen County Jail that we've named our chaplain. And all of us on the board are dedicated Christians that are there for one reason, and that is to change lives. We got a Baptist that's ahead of our organization. I'm Lutheran, and I'm vice chair, and we have another member that's Catholic, and we've been together to help these people because we're all volunteer chaplains in the Allen County Jail. And realize, watching this revolving door and watching this recidivism rate, it just doesn't make sense because what the judicial system is doing now just isn't working, and they know it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Bob, thanks so much. Thanks for the report, because I know folks want to know that those options are out there, and even be supportive. If you live in Indiana, check out Bob and the work they're doing. Support those type of ministries. Bob, my only recommendation I would make, Bob, is I know no 3 months, no radio, no television, but maybe Washington Watch. All right. Anyway, Bob, thanks so much for calling in and appreciate what you're doing. This is how we make a difference. As God leads, we step out and we fill a need in the lives of others through the passion that God gives us. And this is the key, folks. This is how we change things, by serving others and meeting the needs in society. I'm telling you, government is out of options. Their problems are too great for them to solve. Let's help them solve them. All right, folks, out of time. Sorry I didn't get to the rest of the calls. Some interesting conversation today. Lord willing, we will be back tomorrow, and I trust you will as well. Until then, you know what the Apostle Paul said in Ephesians chapter 6. He says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, you guessed it, just keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.